Hello there, droid heads. This is Sam. Just jumping in before the episode starts proper. As you saw from the title, we talked this week in all the spoilery detail about Avengers Endgame, but just ahead of that, we just learned the news that Peter Mayhew, the original Chewbacca, has passed away, and we just wanted to acknowledge that while this episode doesn't have a ton of Star Wars talk in it, we definitely dedicate the episode to him and send our love and thoughts and prayers and support to his family and friends, and of course the legions and legions of fans that that he touched over the years. Peter really seemed like someone who loved the franchise, took a lot of joy in being Chewie, and in really reveled in his participation in Star Wars, and obviously he's a favorite character of ours and of everyone's. So this one's for Peter, and we'll be back as a full squad to dedicate an episode to him and to Chewbacca next week. And for now, please enjoy our thoughts on Endgame, and join us just now in a moment of silence.
Chewie, is that you? Chewie! I can't see, pal. What's going on? Luke's crazy. He can't even take care of himself, much less rescue anybody. A Jedi Knight? I'm out of it. For a little while, everybody gets delusions of grandeur. All right, pal. I'm all right.
Welcome back to the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Alongside Ryan and Chris, I am Sam. We are sadly without Mike tonight, and doubly sad because we are having one of the rare recorded in-person episodes of the Droids. Welcome, guys. How you doing?
I'm well. Mike wasn't feeling well, Mr. Stark, and now there's a pile of pepper sitting next to us. We don't know where he went, but we're hoping that he comes back soon.
Yeah. I mean, I think he's probably having more fun than doing this podcast live with us right now.
I think that's safe to say. I mean, we're all huddled up at a counter sitting closer than we've ever been to each other.
Our food may be delivered in the middle of this podcast, so the back end might just be chewing sounds.
Yeah, you'll be able to, if our mouths sound fuller later on,
right.
You know it was a good meal.
And if our minds sound more tired based on sodium shutdown.
It was a bad meal.
Clearly, we're living up to our reputations as the loosey-goosey boys.
We're the bouncy boys.
We're the bouncy boys.
Bouncy boys are back. The bad bouncy boys of summer. So Mike is exploring some Star Wars VR thing right now, which I'm sure he'll have stories when he comes back. thank you, Ryan, for the pod. All right, we don't have a cough button here at the Droids.
Little water down the wrong pipe. Never hurt anybody. What we're going to talk about, we wouldn't want to do Mike the disservice of talking Star Wars without him. He's our he's our rogue leader. He's our Red Five, if you will. So what we're going to do is we're gonna wrap up the long awaited Disney Marvel Avengers. You know, Infinity Saga segment that we did with our phase rewatches a few episodes ago. Go back and listen to those earlier in the feed if you haven't. We talk about each phase, basically break down the movies and give our main thoughts. But for this podcast, we're going to be talking all about Endgame. We're going to be spoiling it.
Spoiler alert!
So this is a big old spoiler alert. If you haven't seen it, what are you doing?
It also,
made $1.2 billion.
I'm giving the world a warning. I'm giving one more full weekend of release before I start talking about this thing openly.
That's your benchmark?
If you haven't seen it in 10 days,
That's it.
You're taking your life in your own hands here.
There you have it. If you haven't seen a movie in 10 days around Ryan, Ryan will just come up to you and tell you the ending.
Now, we're not going to tell you what he looks like, all right? So if you live in the New York metropolitan area, live in fear.
Look out.
Live in fear. So the way we're going to do this is we're just going to go through, again, I think we hit on it, spoiler warning. If you're tuning out, please follow us on Twitter at DroidsPod, Instagram at DroidsPod, Facebook, The Droids Podcast, and you can email us at droidspod@gmail.com. To check out what we're doing, go back through our feed. We talk Star Wars, we talk about the previous movies, and then tune back into this one once you've seen the movie. But now, all right, did you leave? You're not hearing this if you did.
You're now in a spoiler zone.
Spoiler zone. So what we're going to do is we're going to talk about our favorite parts. We're going to go around the horn and just talk about some of our favorite moments from the movie. And once we go through that a few times, we'll sign off and let you get back to your commute.
We should give a disclaimer that chances are we're going to try to have unique favorite moments. So just because I don't mention a favorite moment doesn't mean that it's not one of my favorite moments. It just means that Chris said it already.
We should have flipped a coin or done something to determine who's going first. Who wants to go first?
All right, I'll start, and it's only fitting given the plot of this movie that I start out of order. This is a smaller moment for me, and something I really, really liked. There was a moment during the final battle when Groot and Rocket were fighting side by side, and it's when Thanos says like "Make it rain," and all the missiles start to fly down.
He says rain fire.
Rain fire. Whatever.
Rain fire. We're going to
make it rain something very different. We'll cut that out. No, we won't. But there's a moment there when it says rain fire. Rocket jumps on top of Groot. And in Guardians of the Galaxy, Groot jumps on top of everyone else. And it was just like an amazing like thing to see. Especially with that character, like, come that far around, that he's, like, everyone in this movie is just self-sacrificing.
It's super touching. I think that's a great moment. And, I mean, we talked about when we did all our casts that, like, we are particularly, maybe it's something to do with having a Star Wars podcast, that we're particularly partial to the Guardians movies and characters.
Sure.
The space opera ones of the group.
Right.
And I mean... It's also highlighted. I mean, throughout most of the movie Endgame, Rocket is alone from his, you know, he's with new friends. He's not with the people he knows. So it's like, you know, he gets Groot back and he has a chance to do something. Great moment. You want me to go?
Yeah.
All right. Ryan nodded. The classic audio sign for go ahead.
Hold on, Sam.
There we go. All right. There we go. You heard it here. Now, people, I'm gonna jump in with one of my favorite moments. Should come as a surprise to no one that I absolutely loved when they introduced the professor, the other big brain in the universe. It's Smart Hulk. It's Professor Hulk in this, and they really like they changed the look of. They made it much more Ruffalo looking. Mm-hmm. They like didn't super like deepen the voice. It was like basically a Ruffalo like mm-hmm. comedy performance,
right?
Just with like a CGI mapped Hulk body on top, and it was delightful.
Yeah, I think that's such a funny addition too, because I feel like with Infinity War, we were all like, "Where's Hulk? Like, why is he in the suit? Like, why aren't we seeing?" It's like, "Oh, he's going to be animated the whole second movie."
Yeah, it's a great reveal, and that's a really funny scene.
It's a super funny scene, and you can tell that like what I love is when you can see in a big like blockbuster movie like this when they map on something like real from like their actual lives, like mm-hmm. I'm sure whether it's the Russos or Marcus and McFeely or someone has been out with like all these A-list celebrities who are in this movie, and it's like someone's gonna get approached for an autograph, meaning right. someone else isn't.
Yeah,
and so they play that for laughs between Hulk and Ant-Man, and you know Ant-Man doesn't have the worldwide recognition, and they like play it in a funny way that first, you know, Paul Rudd is so funny in the scene where it's like he wants to give an autograph and right. like to be asked, but then he's like embarrassed that no one wants mm-hmm. it. And like their banter is great. And I also think the scene has like a touching moment where they actually acknowledge the history with Natasha. It's sort of underserved in the movie. It kind of just gets paid lip service, but it was nice in that moment that they're face to digital face.
Definitely. It reminded me a little bit of Lou Ferrigno too, just kind of like the warmth that he carried. Like, honestly, like, if you ever seen him, like, outside of the Hulk, I heard, like, stories where he was just, like, he still loved when people came up and, like, said, "Hey, Hulk," and that kind of stuff. Like,
I mean, I've never seen him outside of the Hulk or the Incredible Hulk or Ang Lee's Hulk.
I run into him a lot at Whole Foods, and he's a very warm guy.
The Hulk. What year was that series? Check it out.
78?
All right, so before I go, I have a word to say about the term fan service.
Uh-oh, here we go.
Oh, boy.
So, a lot of critiques have been made of this movie and this series, referring to it, moments of fan service in a pejorative. And I understand this, because when I think of fan service, generally it's something that's unrelated to the plot, that is just there for people who have previous knowledge. Here, I'm going to use an example from Star Wars. In The Force Awakens, a movie I absolutely adore, Finn's going through a bag and he pulls out the laser ball that Luke uses in episode 4.
The training.
That is complete fan service. It's like this weird long beat. If you don't know what it means nothing. Fan service is fun, and I'm not getting down on that. However, there's a difference between something like that and a moment like my first moment, which is On Your Left.
Oh, yeah.
Man.
That is not fan service, that is emotional payoff.
Yeah.
That is not a reference to an older movie that everybody will say. Right. It works in the moment, whether you know it or not. However, it is the first thing that Captain America has ever said to his friend Sam, and it's when everybody comes back. It is a stunning movie moment, because the way it's earned over so many movies, and it's also earned so much within this movie. Cap is so desperate. He's on his last legs. He's about to face an army alone, and he's rescued. It is an absolutely stunning moment. A story about when we went to go see this at 7 a.m.
Yep.
My blood sugar was very low. I've been dealing with a little bit of anxiety because of some Infinity Stones of my own.
Hey, you got it.
Some Infinity Kidney Stones of my own. Anyway, I've been dealing with some anxiety, and this moment happened. I've been on the edge of my seat for about 3 hours now. I get so excited. My heart's beating fast, and then I go, oh, I'm a little lightheaded. And then I'm like, oh, I'm really lightheaded. Yeah. Then I'm like, oh, I'm getting tunnel vision. Had a full-on anxiety attack. Had to leave the theater for 15 minutes. And I still loved every moment of it. It was completely worth it. It's one of the greatest movie moments of all time.
Oh, yeah. I 100%. I mean, that is, honestly, that line is what sold me in Captain America Winter Soldier. Is like, when you hear that line at the end, like, because I mean, I like that movie, but I was kind of like so-so. But then when I heard it at the end, I was like, they know what they're doing. Like, these are developed characters, and they start playing that awesome song. Like, to have that moment, it's just like, it's silent. You just saw this, like, biblical picture of Captain America standing in front of Thanos and his ship and his army. And all of a sudden, you just hear that tear.
Oh, my God.
And you hear, like, a little chatter on the mic. And then all of a sudden you hear On Your Left.
And that we see it before he does.
Yep.
There's that moment where the audience, we saw it with the packed house, and the audience has the recognition before he does. Yep. And it's so beautiful.
Yeah. It's just such a cool, cool moment.
Because we know he's saved before he does.
Yep.
And that's like, man, they really do know what they're doing.
Well, and they set it up so beautifully because, you know, Cap, if there's one thing we know about him from all these movies, it's basically that scene. They say it without saying it. I can do this all day. Mm-hmm. And we know as an audience, that's belied by what we're seeing in the movie. You know, he is on his last leg. He has just like given to our viewership, he's given everything he has to try and beat down Thanos. And Thanos has gotten right back up.
Not everything. Not yet.
I like that. I love that callback. Wow. Talk about callbacks from multiple movies. All right, let's get some gore. Marcus McFeely thing. There's a few Goyer-esque tricks in this franchise, but it's a bigger payoff, I think. But it's like we've seen him give everything. And he stands up again. It's unquestionable if he's not joined at that moment, he's going to like lose. He's going to fight till he dies.
Yeah.
And so it's heightened by all of that. The On Your Left thing is, I agree. I want to jump back to when you talked about fan service and like payoff. I agree that this is a moment of like great payoff. I would also agree. I would also say, like, this is a movie that has a lot of fan service throughout it, but I think it's handled really deftly.
I wouldn't even call it fan service because it's emotionally earned.
I felt like even the jokes were like motivating the plot. Like anytime they told a stupid joke, it actually came back in some way. Not that I thought any of the jokes were stupid, but like,
and sometimes they have their cake and eat it too. For instance,
steal my moment.
I don't know. The moment on the elevator.
Yeah, I was just going to bring it up as an example because I was going to say I think this is we're talking about the moment. There's a great setup. So we haven't actually said this is like a time travel movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Which everybody knows.
You should see it.
Yeah, but they're back in the current day, present day, or actually 5 years from now, Avengers are back in 2012 during the Battle for New York, or just post the Battle of New York. And this movie shows us what happened immediately following, what they did with the Scepter and the Cosmic Cube, the Tesseract, and like how they delivered that. And one of those elements, the Scepter, is taken by the S.H.I.E.L.D., who we actually know are Hydra operatives within S.H.I.E.L.D., led by Rumlow, and I don't know the other guy's name, but the bald guy from Winter Soldier. And they recreate, like, visually an identical, like, elevator sequence to start, where there's a glass elevator full of heavies, like, suited and booted with, like, all their gear, and Cap walks in, and it's, you know, he is sizing up the scenario, Chris Evans plays it just like Winter Soldier. Mm-hmm. And it subverts expectations by the way he actually gets out of it. He, being from the future, knows that these guys are Hydra, and he whispers "Hail Hydra" in order to get the scepter and walk away without a fight. It's, I think, the reference that, first of all, it's referencing the comics, which like got in a big fuss a few years ago whenever they used Cap said "Hail Hydra,"
and that's the fan service element of it.
Yes, and it's
however,
but it also works in the film.
Right.
Well, but I guess I'm saying it is fan service, and I don't think that necessarily is a bad thing. I don't think fan service is bad.
I think
inherently,
So I think using it as a pejorative is unfair because when it is used as a pejorative, where people are kind of being dismissive of it, where it's like, oh, this is fan service, blah blah blah. It's like, well, it also, they've been building up for 22 movies to a thing that they're going to wrap up, and for it to be satisfying,
well, I mean, for me,
things need to happen that fans will be happy
about.
Well,
also, though, I mean, I don't think it's just, it's still plot motivated, though, because like, they've built up that whole storyline. Now they're going back in time with this knowledge. How do we fool these people? Oh, this is the surest way to do it. Mm-hmm. And then there's two jokes around that also that also change the plot, where it's like, Loki changes into Captain America and makes fun of him. Mm-hmm. So now Cap sees that. So when Cap sees himself again, he immediately believes that, oh, that's got to be Loki. And then with the Hulk going down the elevator, they're like, no way, Hulk, you can't go to... Because that happened, which is very funny, he ran through the door and pushed Tony out of the way.
So to me, it's just like good structuring.
It's just like...
And like, just because fans love it doesn't necessarily mean that it's like this unmotivated thing.
Sure.
Now... And if it is fan service, then it's doing it well. Because it's like, I was thrilled.
And I would argue that it is that. Because I also think that like the brilliance of what this movie achieved is like it does pull off fan service in a motivated and smart way. But like, you know, these guys didn't write this in a vacuum. They knew what they were doing.
Ultimately, it's like, audiences would want to see this, like, like you guys said, like, they've built to this moment to show this kind of
what an opportunity to have all of these moments from characters that you can call back to that have earned these emotional moments, like On Your Left. That's not a cheap moment. That's not them being manipulative. That's us being with these characters for the last 10 years and them referencing something from the beginning of their relationship that is now paying off now. And I think that that's great.
Yeah.
It's awesome. That was actually I have a very long list of favorite moments, but that was one that I was going to bring up. So I'll say that was my second moment, the elevator, like Hail Hydra, not fight. And the grin he gives at the end is like, that's just for us. That's, I mean, maybe just for me.
Also, a thing I realized watching it the second time is that, like, it's a funny moment where Cap, I'm gonna say the S word. Cap rounds the corner and he sees himself and he says, "You gotta be shitting me."
Yeah, right.
And I was like, "Oh, that's like a funny thing for them to like you." But I remembered later that like in Age of Ultron, he's always language.
Yeah,
guys.
Yeah, it's a funny callback.
Yeah, and it's the only time that we've ever heard Cap curse.
Yeah.
Well, it's the second time.
Is it?
Because he says, "We're gonna go. Let's go get this son of a bitch."
Well, I guess to me, you could say that on daytime television. So I'm not.
Yeah.
Cap is.
It's a swear word.
It's not a swear word anymore.
We're going to have to make this podcast explicit now.
Chris, why don't you chime in with your second item?
The next item and it's I'll go with a few of the lighter moments here, which is stuff that strikes me the most. Thor's reintroduction to New Asgard. I think when you see the rock guy
Corgan Meek.
Yep. When you see him basically say, "Thor, it's happening again," and then like you realize it's like another video game player. Like that is a scenario that I think many, probably a lot of people that listen to this pod are also get in, myself included, where it's like you're arguing, but like to see the God of Thunder be his heavy is like, that's such a funny idea.
Well, and it actually, like, you can even extrapolate it into the plot. I mean, Thor in this movie, his character arc is like dealing with his own failure, mm-hmm. Or his inability to deal with the failure. To like in Infinity War, he defeated Thanos, but he didn't kill him, and he didn't kill him in time to stop the snap from happening. And so it's really funny that like Thor is finding, like, he's avoiding all risk and all real heroism, but he's like playing the hero
right
for his buddy online.
Right, right. You know, he's now like not going like full hero. And I think it's like some kind of like humanization that Thor needed. Like, even though, like, mm-hmm. I think in Ragnarok he had a lot of that, but I think it was like good to see like how low can we get Thor? Like,
mm-hmm. And what did you guys think about like I mean, this is like a super funny moment in the scene and one of the highlights of the scene, but the big reveal of the scene is that, you know, Chris Hemsworth's Thor in this movie has like totally gone to seed he's Fat Thor is right. Like the reveal. I'm curious, how did that work for you guys in the scene and throughout the movie? Because I have an opinion on it.
I understand that it was like a funny gag in the juxtaposition. From self-image standpoint, I wish that they didn't lean so much on this idea that like Thor is fat and so that's funny. But I also understand that it's like Thor is so not himself and so that's
sure.
funny.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think even it's very funny. Like the second time I watched it, like even looking at gutted Thor, he still looked kind of muscular.
There's muscles.
I think it was more like. I don't think the intention there was to point at, like, there's a large man, like, let's laugh at him. I think it was more so, like, Thor, the character, has let himself go, and then, like, that it's a physical attribute.
Also, I will say, none of the other characters, aside from Rocket saying you look like melted ice cream, which is a very funny joke.
Right.
None of the other characters, like, call him fat. It's not like a running thing. Yeah. The running thing is that he looks like, that he's a mess.
Yeah, exactly.
But,
and,
like...
Yeah, and I think it also kind of shows... To me, it seems like his more transitional into like an older, wiser king kind of thing too, which is like, I think it's just an act of like the, you don't need to have all the brawn.
Yeah. I respect that they stuck to it.
Yeah. They did commit to it.
So it's interesting. Cause I think what you guys are both saying is totally true, but it's not what, so I didn't love this choice. And I think a little bit of it for me was like it was a weird hat to put on his character journey for me. Like,
sure,
I think that Thor has maybe the best arc outside of Thanos in Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he's coming off this tremendous loss after this, what was an expected huge win of Ragnarok for him. But it's like he's really broken down in that movie, and it ends with his ultimate failure. He actually doesn't come in and save the day when he thinks he does. And mm-hmm. so the journey on this movie, as I said, is like him reckoning with that. And it felt to me they were making such hay of like his image and him, like, you know, his a Lebowski beard and like the shades and like dressing like schlubby and being overweight suddenly, which is also just like, we all know like what Chris Hemsworth looks like. So it's like, it's ridiculous anyway.
Right.
It's not like the actor let himself go, and we know that because we see him.
If this was Robert Downey Jr., he would have.
but I think the thing that was tough for me was like, they kind of wanted to have it both ways. Like, there are super dramatic moments, and I think that Hemsworth acts those moments really, really well.
Sure.
But they also like, it was giving me whiplash because they also wanted me to be like in hysterics over like him falling asleep in a corner.
Right. They kind of it's kind of hard. They might have. It was a hard tone match.
I almost think that if you just established him as like having been a recluse and drinking,
yeah.
Forget if you remove the if you remove the look element of it, I think it works just as well story wise.
Right.
So it does annoy me. Like, but it was not needed or used smartly in any way. To me,
I think it might also just be it shouldn't. Not necessarily it should make light of drinking problems and that kind of stuff, but like, I think it might also soften that kind of blow. Like, if he was really like destitute and like broken in like a very like dark way, it might scare off the audience or like just make you feel, it might like a way to control tone might just be to.
I will say though that if I had a criticism of the movie, which I'm head over heels for this movie, I just got to say, but if I did have a criticism of the movie, it's that I could have used more of that despairing tone that they had in the first 20 minutes.
Wow.
I think that of a 3-hour movie, at times the humor, because we've come to know it in the Marvel Universe, the humor started to seem compulsive at times. So like, while I love Professor Hulk, I felt like that moment of like silliness came like a little too early in the runtime.
Sure.
But I think it should have been in there. I just wish that we had like a little more of that like beginning, like everyone doesn't know what to do with themselves kind of living in that.
Yeah, and they move out. I agree. I loved that opening segment where they were really dealing with like the darkness and magnitude of what happened. And I think they ran into one critique, because I also love this movie. I like it better than Infinity War. I think one critique that I can't take credit for this because someone else pointed it out, but it's like, because there's so many characters they're trying to deal with, it really does become insular and isolated. Like, the previous Avengers movies, like the Whedon Avengers movies, really made sure that it was like they were saving civilians, they were protecting people.
Right.
And this one had so much else on its mind, and rightfully so. I'm not, this isn't really a criticism, but I do think the movie feels like, we don't, other than, I don't know if it's Joe or Anthony Russo who's in the movie, but other than the one Russo brother in that support group, like, we don't meet a human or see them.
We see a kid.
In the rest of the movie.
We see a sad kid.
That's interesting. I didn't
think of that. So, oh man, I'm getting intensely nervous because I have so many more things I want to talk about, but I have one left.
Go for it.
Do you want me to go or do you want to go, Ryan? Do you want to close out?
You did two. I'll do my second. Does that
work? Oh, have you not? Do your second. Sorry.
Okay, so I'm going with a smaller moment here. There is a sequence in the movie where Tony and Cap go back to 1970 to the army base in Jersey to get Pym particles and the Tesseract. I'm going to try to get through this without getting emotional because I think it's beautiful. And there's a moment where Cap goes into an office and he realizes that it's Peggy Carter's office.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees a picture of himself that she has framed on her desk. And it took me a little while. It took me until my second viewing to notice this. But the picture is of like small Steve Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
It's not of Captain America.
Right.
It's of the Steve Rogers that she met. And I thought that that is such a beautiful detail. And in a world where like, you know, they're establishing that Peggy is thinking about Steve. They're setting up the end of the movie, and their relationship has been a big part of the MCU. But, you know, some filmmaker had to pick the picture to go in there, and that's the one they picked, because it just is such a more moving moment than if there was a picture of Captain America.
Yeah, like full-size Cap. Yeah, absolutely.
And I thought that was just talk about character payoff. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Like that, you 100% nailed it. Like, having that detail, it also builds her character. Like, having not seen like the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and that spinoff, like it immediately adds depth to her character. Mm-hmm. Like, there's just layers there, And it just builds up that what do you call it? Is it irony? Like, it just builds up that feeling that you want them to meet again.
And there's also, it reinforces this idea that, and they do this beautifully in the first Captain America movie, that she doesn't admire him because he's Captain America. She admires him before that. It's not like they don't play it like, oh, like she's disinterested in them when he's Captain America. Like, she thinks Steve Rogers is a great person.
Right.
And also that moment for Steve, because when's the last time he saw himself like that?
Right.
You know, and like, this ties in, and I don't think this is on anyone's list, so I'll just do it quickly. There's a quick moment where they go to fight Thanos the first time,
mm-hmm.
where when they get in the spaceship, there's a very quick close-up of Steve Rogers' eyes, like as they're going into like hyperspace, essentially. And I just thought it was such a beautiful moment because you bring, as the audience, your own emotional weight to it. But it's like, without saying anything, without doing anything, just by showing his eyes, they establish this, like, this is a kid from Brooklyn who grew up in the 1940s.
Right.
And he's, like, on a spaceship now.
Yep. Yeah.
And it, like, they never... Chris Evans plays everything in such a way, like, he never lost that.
Right.
That sense of, like, he's out of time, even when he's, like, a little more comfortable.
In that way, I would equate him to more, like, one of the alien superheroes, like Superman or something like that, where it's, like, he is truly out of his element. I know he's of this world, but he basically is of a different era and, like, of a different time zone. He is not part of the world that we lived in. Mm-hmm. And so I always think of that. He's the only one that's, like, actually missing things, like, mm-hmm. he has a part of his life that is gone.
Yeah. And isn't it crazy that they haven't been able to make a good Superman movie since 1978?
Right, like that, like, if you have that material to go off of.
Well, it's like, and I've said this before about the MCU, why it works when I think that the DC movies don't, which is that the MCU has characters who know that they know they want to do the right thing. And they generally know what the right thing is, but the difficulty sometimes is actually doing that.
Right.
Because it's hard, or it's coming at their own personal cost.
Yep.
As opposed to the DC movies, where the superheroes don't even seem to know what the right thing is, or if they want to do the right thing.
Right, they don't... Yeah, it doesn't seem like... Yeah. It's almost like,
you know,
they have to.
The conflict with them comes with if they should do the right thing.
Yeah.
Where the conflict with our heroes comes with... Of course they want to do the right thing. Sometimes it's just hard to know what that is, and sometimes it's hard to do it.
Yeah, it really puts the superhero, like, genre movie, like, I think I would always kind of, like, sulk at the idea of, like, an origin story, mm-hmm. but now I completely get the payoff of why they did it. Like, sure. You have to see that with every one of these characters that we saw in this ending movie.
Mm-hmm.
If we didn't have that, then I feel like...
You end up with Justice League.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you don't have a movie. And I would go back and forth. Maybe I think I just had Spider-Man fatigue. Like I just saw him... I saw him become Spider-Man too many times.
Sure.
And so, but now I'm like, I'm so happy for it.
Sam, you want to hit us with your number three?
I'm really torn here, guys. Mm. There's like...
You can only say one.
There's three. I mean, there's something that we have to talk about before the pod is done. I think I'm gonna go with a different moment, though, because I think one of you guys is gonna mention it, and if we don't talk about it,
then
I'm calling an audible for a fourth
it.
At the end.
Whoa, number but, four, the rare.
So what I'm gonna say is my third top moment, and actually this might play interestingly into the fan service conversation we had earlier, but the moment where they're essentially playing keep away with the Iron Gauntlet, the glove that Tony constructed. They're trying to keep it away from Thanos and his army, and Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is back. He has it at one point, and Captain Marvel shows up, and she shows up in this, like, tremendous fashion. She just single-handedly destroys Thanos's, like, ultimate Star Destroyer type ship,
yep.
The Executor or whatever that he's flying.
I like that he names it.
And so she completely destroys that. She's clearly the most powerful player on the field. And she's like, first of all, I love Brie Larson's delivery. Like, he's like, I'm Peter Parker. And she's like, hey, Peter Parker, you got something for me? And what they do in this moment is he hands off the Iron Gauntlet to Captain Marvel to get it to, they're trying to get it to the Ant-Man's van. And
He's isn't that like, a beautiful sentence?
It's so funny.
Yeah, he's like,
it's so funny that came back, that van.
But also, like, just what am I even saying? Like, yeah. This means nothing to anyone, yeah. But like, but it means everything to all of us.
Yep.
But so she has to get it across this, like, you know, basically no man's land of just like all enemies. And you know, Tom Holland's Peter Parker says something like, but how are you going to get it there? And every woman from the Marvel Cinematic Universe who's still on the table is like, shows up, and one of them says like, she has help. And we see Valkyrie, we see Pepper Potts as Rescue, we see Gamora and Nebula and Mantis and
Danai Gurira, I forget
Okoye. Yeah, Okoye. So we're and Scarlet Witch, like all of these, like all of the women, and they essentially sort of form this tableau of like women Avengers, like mm-hmm. and they just have like a moment that's like a splash page where they run into battle and like blast through, and you know, Brie Larson, you know, powers through, and it. I do think this. Some could say that it is a fan service moment. Mm-hmm. It is clearly written and shot to like appease and not even appease, but to like to tick a certain box.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I threw my hands up in the air. I loved seeing it. It was so powerful. And like, when I saw this movie with my wife, she was sitting next to me, and she just like was like bouncing in her chair. She was like, "Yes, yes, yes! The ladies, give it to them!" You know, like yeah. She was so excited, and I was so excited to see it and like see all these heroes. So like, I found it effective.
Yeah, it's. I think it's a great moment. There's been a lot written about it, and I'm not sure that we're even the ones to talk about this, but you know, we're here now. But so a lot has been said about how this moment, considering Marvel's past of dealing with female characters, that this moment is like too little too late. And I understand that criticism, and I'm certainly not defending Marvel's handling of female characters in the past. They haven't always been great. However, that being said, with a franchise that has this much cultural cachet, that is this huge, for them to be trying to make a course correction, knowing that they can't change the past, but now they have all these great female characters that they can use going forward, and hopefully they will.
Yeah.
I thought, well, then I'm glad that they did this moment, even if they have not established that it is earned for Marvel to do that up until now. It's like, you still have all these amazing characters and these amazing actresses. Why wouldn't you have this moment?
I think it goes back to like a tenet that we found in the new trilogy of Star Wars, is that it is important to see somebody on screen that looks like you, like in that scenario. Yeah. And then if you see a team of women just getting it done, like that's like if you're a little girl at a theater, a little boy in a theater, doesn't matter. You're watching this and you see this happen, like, oh yeah, and they're superheroes too. Like,
and you could. Acknowledge and criticize the past of Marvel's treatment of female characters, and acknowledge that, and also acknowledge that this is a very powerful moment. And if we're going from what Stan Lee used to say, every comic book is someone's first comic book. So, like, this is someone's first Marvel movie.
Right.
Do they have any idea what's going on? I don't know.
I wouldn't recommend it.
But, you know, these movies will be going on for a long time. We're entering phase four, and, you know, there are young people that are seeing this now, and this is their first phase.
Yeah.
And they didn't experience the Marvel that didn't have any female characters.
Right.
And that could be in the past, and Marvel hopefully can course correct that.
Yep.
And give more time. And I thought that this was hopefully a great start to that, along with Captain Marvel being in theaters right now.
And being like the number two movie right now in theaters, which is insane.
That's amazing. I'll kind of go into my number three. Mm-hmm. I'll say 2.5 than three, because it's a little bit of Sam's moment with all of the women together, superheroes together, and then so Captain Marvel. Though after I saw Captain Marvel, I was way into it. I really liked that character a lot. Yeah. The thing that's like alluring to me as far as that character goes is that she is like the most powerful. Like she is, and I love that with characters that Luke Skywalker is supposed to be the most powerful until recently, which is, or maybe not. Who knows what happens in Episode 9, Part 1?
Oh, God.
But I think that her the way they kind of played her against, like, why didn't you help? And she's like, well, there's a million other worlds that don't have you guys. And like, and then to have her in that final fight when she gets punched in the head, and like, that was insane. And like,
it doesn't phase her.
Yeah. But for them to set this up as like, oh wow, like, you're the most powerful person in the world, and this has happened. Like, you had to state this. There's other worlds. There's other terrible things. And then when she gets like beaten and that final thing, I was like, well, I don't know what they're gonna do. I'm done. Like, I can't figure out what they're gonna do. That was a very powerful moment, though. So it's like, way to like raise the stakes. You give her a whole movie where she's like, oh, she's the greatest superhero ever, and then Thanos like gets to her, and then like, you're like, oh my god, like, I don't know what they're gonna do. Obviously, you know, something good's gonna happen. But
it's a movie.
So that's my 2.5 to kind of go off the scene what Sam was talking about. I think that I really liked, I was a big fan of them going back to, and I know we talked a lot about going back to the first Avengers movie. And a couple scenes in particular were basically the, when we saw, this is a weird one, and this is just something that like made, like, I don't know, just thought it was neat. They show old Hulk from the first Avengers movie, and then they show like new Hulk, and it almost looked like a technical demonstration of how far they came. Like, if you look at the old Hulk,
yeah,
and then you look at the new Hulk, I was like, wow, it's like they really have made strides here. It's a dumb moment to have be your favorite, but I appreciated that.
I also like that the reason you like it is like the tech demo, like CGI demonstration of it, because like, it's also a funny moment where they're literally showing how far the character is.
Yeah, well, exactly, I also think when they show that's like a new shot,
right?
So they actually like made him look not as good.
Yeah, it looked intentional to me, and I hope that was the intention, because that's what I thought, because like, it looked.
I would actually just, Ryan, from you saying that one of the best elements, I was worried when we were all like fairly certain this was going to be a time travel movie, and when that gets confirmed, like, I don't know, in sort of like act two of this movie,
yeah,
I was like anxious about it. I was like, oh, is this gonna be we revisit the Marvel clip show
episode? Oh yeah, sure.
And what's so brilliant is
we got locked in that walk-in freezer.
Right. What they did was show it like everything from different angles. They reshot all new material, but made it look like it fit in that movie.
They went out of their way to make it so it's like you're seeing something new. You're not going to see a rehash.
It's an all new movie. Yeah. Every scene is new in this movie.
Yep.
Even though it's a time travel movie going to the past.
Yeah. That's
perfect.
So, I also had that same hesitation with it.
But, and then just to go off that scene, I think that when Hulk sees, don't know her character's
the
name.
The ancient one.
I thought that was kind of neat, because that was a good way to like reverse describe the plot, or like it really helped like everyone, including myself, to be like, oh, this is what they're doing, and this is why they can't just do this.
Like, you get some classic Ruffalo tucked in plaid t-shirt. Yeah, exactly. Plaid button-ups.
So I
saying like, but if we take the stone and cut it in half. Also, it is the only time in the movie that we see Mark Ruffalo.
That is true.
And it has the whole world asking, which one's better looking?
Aw.
Hey, I love Ruffalo. I've been a rough head.
Not to Ruffalo your feathers.
Now, Ryan showed me a little preview of his I'm assuming, because he was trying to prove to me that, and he successfully proved to me that, you know, we had a lot of the same moments on here.
Yeah, but here. That was easier, Chris.
So Ryan showed me on his phone his list of moments, and he was proving to me that we had several of the same moments on there, which I appreciated. But I also saw what's on there, and I think he knows that my audible, and he's going to bring it up now.
I am going to bring it up. I think. Yeah. Every single one of my moments was cap related. Because I'm a cap head.
This is not what I thought you were going to bring up.
Oh, really?
Wow. All right, so we're still going to call an audible. Finish out, man.
Oh, okay, great. Well, I was trying to prove to you that a moment that I think didn't register with that many people, which was Carol and Peter, I was on my list because I thought that was great. Okay, so I thought this would have definitely come up by now. Captain America picks up Mjolnir in this movie.
Oh, right.
Fights with him.
Yeah.
Or it.
Yeah.
Or her, I don't know.
Yeah.
Talk about setting up the rules of a world and then establishing meaning from it.
Sure.
It is a beautiful moment.
Yeah.
We see someone pick it up. We have a feeling we know who it is.
Yeah.
The audience lost its mind.
Yeah.
And then also the momentum of it, just from a pure spectacle level, because mm-hmm. that's essentially what this moment is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's a character thing. We've all known Cap was worthy.
Yeah.
But for some reason, now the hammer thinks he's worthy. I don't know what he had to do.
Yeah. But, well, I mean, he did move it before.
I heard an interesting theory on this. That's not mine. I can't take credit. Mm-hmm. But in between his first attempt in Age of Ultron and this movie, he has the truth has been revealed to Tony that he was hiding from Tony in terms of the Bucky and Bucky killing Tony's parents. So like that sort of potentially that's arguably the one blemish.
You know? I see. Interesting.
Made him
it's an interesting
unworthy.
Theory.
Yeah. Apparently like, you cannot tell a lie.
But I feel like Thor's done like a lot of worse stuff.
For sure.
than but, just hide somebody.
But just in terms of pure spectacle and pure like, man,
yeah.
if... Of all the comic book movies I've seen, this is the comic bookiest.
Throwing
his shield, then bouncing Mjolnir off of it to hit Thanos in the back of the head.
Yep.
It like things like that. It's just like everybody, soup to nuts, gets this movie that's making it. It's the stunt team, the actors, the directors, the writers. Everybody knows exactly what to do with these characters. And like, it is a tremendous movie moment. There's a slow-mo shot where he uppercuts Thanos and he just lays him out.
Yeah.
And it...
I heard K-O, K-O. In the back.
It just owns. It just, I can't, I wish I had something more articulate, but it owns. It's so
at
great.
The end of the day, it's a comic book, and that's what you want to see.
And what's so great about it in terms of character is that Thor and Cap, neither of them are surprised.
Right.
And talk about a man who knows how to hit a hero pose, who knows how to hit the stance. I mean, like, you know, I have nothing to add. This was the first moment that I threw my hands up in the air. It's such a payoff for all the movies, and it's a payoff for, like you say, for both those characters actually. Mm-hmm. And then they button it up with a nice joke later.
The small one.
So they are both standing next to each other, and it's reminiscent of the first Avengers where they're standing side by side, and like the shield returns and Mjolnir returns. And they basically have that same sort of shot, except it's Mjolnir and Stormbreaker. Mm-hmm. Stormbreaker goes into Cap's hands. Mjolnir returns to Thor, and Thor like basically is like, "Trade, you get the small one," which is really a great beat for Thor too. You know,
what was the one that you thought I was going to say?
I don't think we're doing our duty if we don't wrap. And I'm actually glad it's coming last because I think we should close out on this moment. And I guess I'll just. Asking you guys a question. Are you hungry? They give a beat. This is the most spoiler of all the spoilers, but
my own personal coin giver.
So in this movie, Tony sacrifices himself. It's extremely emotional and they have a huge payoff with everybody there. But the moment that sells it when they're honoring him, so he in this movie, he has a daughter, and his daughter, who's 5 years old, is sitting with Jon Favreau as Happy Hogan. And Happy's sharing a moment after, you know, it's her dad's funeral. And he asks her if she's hungry. And she says yes. And he asks her what she wants. And she says cheeseburgers. And Favreau takes a minute and then takes a breath and it says, "Your dad loved cheeseburgers." And then he goes one further and says, "I'm going to get you all the cheeseburgers you want." And it's a callback to when Tony first returned from captivity in Iron Man 1. And it's there for, like, all of us knew it, I think, in the theater that day. But even if you don't, it's an extremely touching scene.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just got goosebumps when you described it. It is giving, I think, a little, like, tip of the cat to Favreau, like, "Hey, man. You started this. You saw it through to the end. But you were here for the ride." And then I'm assuming he's just improvising with her. Like, I think he's got to be.
I don't think that's improvised.
I don't think it's improvised.
I mean, afterwards, like.
And to be fair, Jon Favreau, who as an actor I don't normally think is very strong, although I do think his Happy Hogan is very good. Yeah, I think he's really amusing. He really does a great job in the moment.
Yeah.
And that little girl, the girl who plays Tony's daughter, is amazing. And also like the cutest little actress in the world.
Oh yeah. When she's like a juice pop.
Yeah. Are you thinking about juice pops? And Robert Downey Jr. does a great job with her too. Like just the scenes with them are incredibly light. And
also like, yeah, a nod to RDJ in this movie. Just like, I feel like maybe a couple of them, he was kind of like hanging around in the green screen. This one, like, he's bringing it. And like those early shots when he comes back, like that's some serious like acting going on.
All honestly, a lot of this has the feel of, all right, guys, we're going to do this one more time.
Right.
Because a lot of people who you could argue maybe have been phoning it in a little bit really bring it in this one. Because they're like, well, I just got to do it one more time.
And I would say, even if they are phoning, it's phoning in the sense that, like, ultimately they're in a comic book movie. Like, it's like, how serious could you take this if you're not Christian Bale?
Yeah, I just, I haven't gotten the idea that, like, Jeremy Renner was like super into it, but in this one I think that he like really goes for it. Yeah. So what an end to it.
What a ride.
What a thing they achieved. What a commercial and a creative achievement.
It's remarkable that it really is both. I think this movie is one I'm going to watch over and over and over again. I know I'll watch it more than Infinity War, which is crazy because it's kind of the second half of that, but I like it better. I think it's just like it's really an incredible achievement. Like, you don't know how they did it kind of when you actually sit down and think about it. And I think it's really, really kind of it's touching in a way to me that it's like that first Iron Man, which was such a risk and that worked so well. It's just like Disney and Kevin Feige have like never like let go or like underappreciated Robert Downey Jr. Mm-hmm. And they give him.
Yeah.
You get the sense that they like really made this his movie without sacrificing the others. It's not like it's not Cap's movie. They give him so much. He's so good in it.
I think it's the perfect balance to have the Russo brothers do it, who are like, they're Cap's guys, but then like Tony, like Robert Downey Jr., I'll say his name, he can handle himself. Like I don't think he needs quite the amount of direction as maybe some of the other younger actors need. Nor will he take it. So it's like, all right, I'll go direct the Captain America side. Tony.
Robert, you just handle this part.
Yeah, you do your thing.
They do a cool thing also. There's no post-credit sequence this movie, but during the credits,
which is kind of shocking to be honest.
During the credits, they do a very cool thing where they honor like the original six with these like sort of great portraits against like scenes from all their movies and appearances and stuff. And they have their signatures, like the actors have all signed their names, which. I didn't actually put it together at first, but that's a Star Trek thing that they did when the original cast like signed off from the Star Trek franchise. And it is similar. We've been with these people for 22 movies over the course of 10 years, which was not dissimilar from the way we were with like Shatner and Nimoy and DeForest Kelly. Yeah. So it was like, that was also a nice thing. And it feels like a very special credit.
Yes.
Like it feels...
Sam...
The second time I saw it, I stayed to watch them again.
Same.
I think you mentioned this on the podcast, I think almost years ago, where we were talking about the Marvel movies and how you said that the way they've been positioned is almost like a really good season of television.
Yeah.
Like there's 22 movies and each one leads into the end. It follows three nice tight arcs and then you have the ending. And I think... whatever this accomplishment is, I don't know if we'll ever see something like this ever achieved again. It is phenomenal. It is something new. I know they're just like kind of superhero movies have been around forever. They'll be around forever. But I think this is this 10-year span and this commitment to it. And then they got relatively the same people, the same tone, the same everything throughout this thing. Like, this is something special.
Well, it's also, it has that element of a finale of television where it's reflective in a way where you're thinking, Where was I the first time I watched this? What have I gone through throughout this entire thing that this has been a constant in my life? It's the reason, aside from good storytelling, that we get emotional when television shows end.
Yeah.
It's because it's a marker in time. It's like the Olympics.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and for this, I was talking to Nicole about this, about the idea that these movies are great. If someone decided 2 weeks ago, like our friend Emily, that that they're like, Endgame is coming up, I'm going to watch all the Marvel movies.
Yeah.
They will have a great experience, and this will come, and it'll be so satisfying, it'll be great. It is a vastly different emotional experience than if you've been watching them for 10 years, because the time is just built into it.
I've seen every one of these movies in the movie theater, I think, exception of Doctor Strange.
Yeah, sure.
Because of the troubling characters. But I have seen them all in the theaters, and I can remember every single movie. Like, Sam, I remember we saw Iron Man together. I can remember seeing Thor, both Thors, at the theater that's up the street from us, and like coming back and be like, we're going to get ripped. Had we seen this movie, the new one, now I'm like, I want to look like Thor again.
You do look like Thor. I will say that, you know, Ryan mentioned it. We all went to see this at 7 a.m. on a work day.
Yeah.
That was because we couldn't get tickets. Like half the universe, we were snapped out of Fandango lines.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But, I mean, every one of these that I've seen in theaters, I've seen with you, Chris. I've gone to see every Marvel movie with Chris in theaters, and it was something like we went to the midnight screening when we were students at Penn State in May of 2008 and saw Iron Man, and we're like buzzing after it. And at the time, all I could fathom was like, I can't wait for Iron Man 2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What a joke. You know, like, but it's meant a lot, man. Wow. It's like 10 years of our friendship, like, seeing those together in, you know, on the big screen.
It's pretty wild. Yeah. It's kind of what you said. You just, the emotion that you get from it.
Yeah. They last forever, these movies. And
Chris just punched me in the shoulder, like, softly, like, hey, to go, sport.
No, and it is truly an emotional experience. And I think it is an amazing, obviously, commercial achievement. I think it's an amazing creative achievement. These movies have meant, not just to us, to millions of people so much. We're talking about it on a Star Wars show. I will say, finally, that a piece of true fan service, because it doesn't even make sense in the moment of the movie, but man, it was beautiful. They finally say Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
And I've never been in a theater where, because it's like Avengers and then like a long beat. Never been in a theater where I heard several people go, say it.
Yeah.
Say it.
Yeah.
Say
I heard people, the second screen I went to, people were screaming it.
Yeah,
all I heard was people sniffling through the entire end, though, because it's so like it's such an emotional payoff.
Wow.
Do we think? I guess the only question remaining is, can JJ recreate it? Is that what we're gonna get?
I mean, so
this December, do we get a repeat?
I'm just saying, extrapolate time wise, you're hanging on to something for 45 years here. That's gonna wrap up. This was 10 years. I don't know if I'm ready.
I've been seeing these Star Wars movies with Chris. Now, technically, I've only been watching Star Wars movies with Chris for about, I don't know, like probably like 9 or 10 years.
Yeah, so.
But the truth is, I think we've watched them like 70 years worth.
I've also spent more hours talking with you guys about Star Wars than I have about anyone with anything else, except my therapist.
But that's also about Star Wars.
That's also about Star Wars.
That's definitely.
Why don't people love The Last Jedi like I do?
That's definitely something to look forward to on the droid you're looking for. Thank you for listening. You can follow us on Twitter at DroidsPod, on Instagram at DroidsPod. You can email us, droidspod@gmail.com. Facebook, never quite figured that out. Just search The Droids You're Looking For podcast. I think that has to do it. Thank you, Marvel. Thank you, Avengers, for defeating Thanos. Thank you, everybody, just for letting this kind of thing happen in our world. We'll be back next week with Mike, hopefully.
He'll scold us.
And we
only said Star Wars twice.
He should have some fun Star Wars stories of his own. So thank you all for listening, and we're gone.
Bye, Tony.
Hey, yo, Cap.
Hey, did you
Oh, wait, he's in the Marvel movies.
I was trying to...
He plays Starhawk, right?
I was trying to think of some kind of...
Yeah. Hey, yo, guys.
Oh, that's right.
Millennium Falcon.
Hey, Millennium Falcon. All right, Annie. Bye.